This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Nolte. On the program today, we have a conversation with Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds. He has been involved in a series of roundtable discussions as part of the Indiana Sheriffs Association, meeting with regional sheriffs, state lawmakers, and local officials. He had one of those actually held at the Porter County Jail in Valparaiso not long ago. We'll find out more from Sheriff Reynolds about how the series of discussions has been going on, with what sheriffs are dealing with these days. We'll also have another edition of Green Fleet Radio, which is made possible by South Shore Clean Cities for you today. And South and Lakeshore Focus host Keith Kirkpatrick had a chance to talk with Gary's mayor recently, and we'll bring you that conversation. That and more coming up after the news. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds and his colleagues got together recently at a roundtable session at the Porter County Jail to talk about the issues that concern them the most as law enforcement officers. We happen to have Sheriff Reynolds with us here to give us an idea of how things went and some of the topics that were discussed. Sheriff Reynolds, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Good morning.
Well, if you will first, tell us the reason for having a roundtable session recently.
Well, I'm on the executive board for the Indiana Sheriff Association, and one of the things that we've tried, we've talked about, was trying to get all the sheriffs on board on various topics, and without just mass emails and whatever. So, what we came up with was we broke up the state in five areas, and we decided to have roundtable discussions and with the sheriffs. We had the day before mine, we had one in Vandenberg. Mine was last Tuesday, and then the day after was Hendricks County that had all the sheriffs around the donut and around Indianapolis attend. And we have one tomorrow up in Angola, mm-hmm. And there's going to be one in the southeast part of the state. And the objective is there's multi-objectives, actually. One is just to get the sheriffs together, give them an opportunity to discuss amongst ourselves, too, what some of the problems are that we're facing every day in their individual counties. Okay, but also what we did was we invited all of the state legislators from their respective counties. So they had an opportunity to hear from the sheriffs firsthand some of the concerns. So that was really, a powerful presentation. And then we invited representatives from the state, too. We had Homeland Security, we had the Attorney General's Office, and the Governor's Office all attend. And we all had them sitting in the same spot. So this is our fourth one throughout the state, and they've been very well received by everyone attending.
Now, I understand that you, a couple of years from now, you're going to be the next president of the Indiana Sheriffs Association, so it probably pays for you to be more familiar, even though you may be in some respects with your colleagues in other parts of Indiana. It's nice to make the rounds, I suppose, and learn what specific problems are, say, in southeast Indiana or in northeast Indiana or around central Indiana and see what the problems are and compare them with yours.
Right, without question. And I think what was some of the legislators actually said that of the 2.5-3 hour presentation, it was one of the most powerful time spent as a legislator, because he had the opportunity to hear from the bigger counties like St. Joe, Lake County, but then from the smaller counties like Warren, Benton, Newton, Pulaski, Stark. We went as far as Fulton and Cass, and they saw that there was a lot of similarities of some of the issues in the jails, for example, and how everyone's dealing with the mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that was brought up, but it probably brought up in it from a different perspective that they never heard before, because they brought up the fact that we have to almost daily transport a lot of these mental health inmates that we can't accommodate, and we have to find places for them. And it's really a burden on the individual sheriffs. And that was one of the common the themes throughout all the counties, is how they're dealing with mental health inmate, you know, inmates that are that have mental health issues. And then, of course, the drug. We talked about the opiate problem in each individual county, and we also talked about school safety and with some of our concerns. And this was before Noblesville and before that actually struck in our state again. And so I think it's good to hear from different perspectives. These are all elected individuals, the sheriffs, and they're all trying to do the right thing. And they most eloquently described how they're basically keeping a lid on the pressure cooker, so to speak, in their individual jails. Because the jails are like a litmus test for each jail. So you can go to different maybe counties south of here, and meth is a problem. Or up here, meth isn't a problem, but heroin is. So when you're in a room and you're hearing it from the different sheriffs, what their issues and problems, and also how things are going well. There was a lot of positive discussions of their treatment programs in their jail and what's been effective.
I know you had a chance to talk about what you've been able to do there at the Porter County Jail and make the changes and all since you've taken office, and that's probably helped give the sheriffs ideas if they don't have them already. I know, too, that one of the other big problems, besides these pressing problems about the drug problem in general, mental health issues that you encounter in jail, but also just the overcrowding. And I know that you and the smaller counties are especially hit hard when you've got jails that are filled not with real criminals, but with people who are low-level offenders, and they're just taking up space, which should go to more serious crimes.
Right. No, that's no question. We're very fortunate in our county. We have six judges that are very in tune to what's going on in our jail, and they've really worked hard in getting the people that are in our jail that don't belong in our jail out. But unfortunately, the people that are in our jail, most of them probably need to be in our jail, but we've worked hard in trying to accommodate what you're just referring to. And some of the jails don't have that structure set up, and they have most of the jails in Indiana have an overcrowded problem. There's no question about it, and they're actually paying other counties to house their inmates. So we hope we don't get to that point right now, but right. Currently, like right, if people need to understand it, in our jail right today, we have 71 females, and every one of them has a substance abuse problem of the 71 females. And of the male population, about 95% have a substance abuse problem, and about 70% of them all have some form of a mental health issue. So that's a struggle for us, on a daily basis.
Yeah. I would imagine that even though you're doing the best you can with these problems, with the population in the jail as it is, you probably are able, if you can, or you're trying to work out ways to get the inmates an opportunity to get some kind of help, if it's not some kind of medical help because of their substance abuse issues, but also the mental health issues, too. But here again, a lot of people taking up a lot of space, and these are a lot of people that need help, and there may be rather tight resources there in the Valparaiso area.
There's no question about it. Right now, we're real proud of what we're doing in our jail. We have over 120 inmates in some type of program, and we keep the track of the numbers so we know how it affects recidivism. We know that the more intense programs, their therapeutic community, and we call it the Life Principles program, which is like the God Pod, where they actually are in a cell pod together, living together, and they read the Bible 4 or 5 hours a day, but we bring in ministers, non-denominational. And it's real intense. And when they get out, they go to a halfway house. And we know from that intense program, the recidivism for them is about 20%. So we have an 80% success rate with that.
That's
However,
great.
We just don't have we're not structured so everyone could go through that type of program, but we know we're on the right track.
Yeah. We're talking with Porter County Sheriff David Reynolds. He and his colleagues from other law enforcement agencies have gotten together on a series of roundtable sessions around the state as part of what the Indiana State Sheriff's Department, Sheriff's Association is trying to do so that other sheriffs get to hear about the problems that are common and some new problems that pop up in these regions of the state. And here, I know lately, in the one that you sponsored there in Valparaiso at the Porter County Jail, you had some state lawmakers like Ed Soliday come in and listen in and offer their ideas. What kind of ideas in some of these discussions that you've been attending around the state have the other state lawmakers mentioned are issues that are likely to come up, maybe proposed legislation in the next General Assembly session?
Well, that's a really great question. We're actively trying to they just passed a piece of legislation regarding school safety that, you know, it's a step in the right direction, but we don't think it's anywhere close to where we need to be. And so we've been contacting legislators all throughout the state, but also, of course, our own. And they're being very receptive in knowing that the ball's in their court a little bit. They need to write some legislation with more teeth and to keep our, you know, to actually fortify our schools more than they are, provide the necessary resources that are available, and in a piece of legislation. And I think right now there's we've been reaching out to about four or five legislators that have are known to have passed legislation every year and have the influence in their House and Senate to get this done. And you mentioned Soliday, but Ed Soliday's been very supportive on a lot of the initiatives that we've done here in Porter County, as well as Ed Charbonneau and Chuck Mosley and Karen Talion.
Yeah.
But Soliday has been he's the guy that with the influence down there right now, and he's been he's been very supportive of what we're trying to do here in Porter County.
Now, I have to ask you, Sheriff Reynolds, since like as you made the rounds of these other sheriff's departments and other jails in the state for the series of roundtable discussions, when you make these trips to these other jails and wherever it happens to be, whether it's in Porter County, which of course you're familiar with, that's your home territory, but if say you go down to Johnson County, or maybe you go even further south down to Vandenberg County, to Orba County, do you find things, situations there that you happen to see how the jail setups might happen to be that you happen to like and think that maybe if you get back with the county commissioners and other officials who have the say-so about making adjustments to a jail, that they might be able to incorporate some of these things into what you're doing there in Porter County?
Well, that's another good point. I think we always are in a position where we can learn. You mentioned Vandenberg County. I'm very close to that sheriff down there. He just has a tremendous overcrowded problem. But you know, one thing that separates Porter County from a lot of these counties that are even bigger than us is that we have a more of an unincorporated area than even Vandenberg. So Vandenberg basically is Evansville. So their main objective and their main, you know, energy is all focused around the jail. Where we have the jail, plus we still have about 90,000 people that live in an unincorporated area. But what we're trying to do with these discussions too, is entertain the thought of regional jails where we maybe not combine the jails, but if there is any addition to the jail, that addition would be supported by the Department of Corrections, where they could fund part of it, and we can put some of these people that are suffering from mental health disorders in one of those additions to the jail. That if you understand what I'm saying.
No, that's a good
right
idea,
now
yeah.
we do not have a secured location outside of Logansport that we can transport these people, most of them don't belong in jail. You know, you follow me? I mean, they might be in here in a non-violent offense. Some of them are in here for trespassing. They're in here for some kind of violation of a probation, and they're really they just have a mental health issue. And what we're seeing throughout the state is everyone is trying to how to trying to come up with a solution on how to deal with this. And I know they've spoke to the governor several times. He's more than aware of this, and he's trying to do, working with the Department of Corrections, trying to figure out what we're going to do here. Because when they changed the law a couple of years ago, we used to have A, B, C, D. Then we went to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, 1 being the most serious. Well, the 6s and the 5, a lot of 5s, are not going to DOC. They're staying in the jails.
Right.
So the jails have become, for a lack of better description, they're becoming like little prisons. And most of these jails, like you mentioned in Johnson and the smaller counties south of here, they're not equipped to handle it. Mm-hmm. And it's been a problem throughout the state. But, you know, that's, again, one of the objectives of these roundtable meetings is that we can bring these issues up, you know, in a professional manner to the legislators so they understand how these jails and sheriffs are being impacted. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes, I think, in the next legislature because of these round table discussions, because they're done in a very positive manner, even though there might be some negative objective
right.
Descriptions of what's going on.
Well, Sheriff Reynolds, we're going to have to leave it at that. Sounds like more discussions, more roundtable sessions, and I'm sure you're going to be involved in them as well in the future. We appreciate you spending some time talking about the one that you hosted here in Valparaiso here not long ago, and the opportunity you had a chance to see other sheriff's departments and talk about the common problems and hear about the different problems that that county sheriffs have all across Indiana. So thanks for spending some time to talk about it today.
Well, thank you, Chris. Have a good day.
You too. Porter County Sheriff Dave Reynolds here on Regionally Speaking on 89.1, listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. It's time once again for another episode of Green Fleet Radio, and here's your host, Carl Lissick.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Today, our guest is Mr. Bill McCall. He's the communications manager for the Indiana Toll Road Concession Company. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you here today. Congratulations on winning the MACOG Partners for Clean Air Award.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very proud of it.
Yeah, and you know, some of the things that Indiana Toll Road Concession Company has been working on for cleaner air in our area has been phenomenal. So I know the Indiana Toll Road is a South Shore Clean Cities member, and we're excited about some of the sustainable initiatives that you have underway. So I understand the Travel Plaza Master Plan formalized some of these practices. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about this plan?
Yeah, we're very happy. Our travel plazas have incorporated numerous aspects of our sustainability goals, with one major one being the increased interest in solar energy. So we've connected the travel plazas to municipal sewer and water services, reducing the need for on-site maintenance and other factors. And the bathrooms as well in the plazas have low-flow toilets to save on water, high-efficiency dryers to cut down on energy and waste, and the buildings have LED lighting throughout, so we're very pleased to incorporate all of those within the travel plazas.
Sure. And how's the construction schedule coming? I mean, is this pretty much everything pretty close to complete?
Everything is on target. We have 8 new travel plazas. Mm-hmm. 6 of them are already under ongoing. We have the one in Elkhart scheduled to be open July 4th.
Wonderful. And so you've also been working on greening your fleet and your generators to cut emissions. What changes are underway for the toll road fleet?
Well, we have – our fleet includes over 300 vehicles.
Wow, that's a lot of vehicles.
It is. They're out there maintaining the road, keeping it safe for our customers. And as a result, we've been making the shift towards more fuel-efficient vehicles, with all our passenger vehicles exceeding 30 miles per gallon for fuel efficiency. We're also reducing vehicle emissions by replacing 42 plow and dump trucks with clean diesel. We've also converted 11 diesel generators to compressed natural gas. So all of it going towards cutting the emission footprint.
Sure. You know, and again, working with your team of professionals, you know, it's just exciting to see how passionate the Indiana Toll Road is in regards to doing all these things. So congratulations. We look forward to all these improvements that you're working on. So I know we've seen signs along the toll road about planting trees as well. How many trees have you planted?
Well, last year we planted 700 trees.
Wow.
And, yeah, it was a great undertaking. We have a very high volunteer rate with our employees. Just this past month, our employee volunteers joined over 30 Penn High School students and the Indiana Department of Natural Resources to plant another 100 trees alongside the toll road.
Wonderful. We're talking today to Mr. Bill McCauley. He's the communications manager for the Indiana Toll Road Concession Company. So, Bill, I know you've also talked about saving energy with LED lighting. So how many light fixtures have you replaced?
Well, so far we've converted over 1,000 light fixtures to LED.
Wow.
That's more than 60% more efficient than the previous bulbs we were using. It's given us a savings. I think the engineers figured out 1.3 kilowatts of energy savings every year.
That's wonderful.
It's unbelievable.
So I know you're also a big proponent of solar, as you recently mentioned. Tell our listeners about the solar projects that are underway.
Well, we've made it a priority to utilize solar panels during our Travel Plaza upgrades. And in 6 months, we've produced over 55,000 kilowatts with the changes we've made so far. Our upcoming administration building will also have solar panels, including a 73.5 kilowatt solar array. So
that's
it's
awesome.
Really been a high priority for us with the sustainability.
No, that's wonderful. So I know you're also on track for LEED Gold certification at the new administration building. So what does that involve?
Yeah, we're on track for LEED Gold certification. It's involved close coordination with our designers, engineers, and contractors from the very first day of design process. We'll be achieving gold through design elements such as the photovoltaic array. It's basically solar panels, sustainable site design, and sustainable material selection. So our contractor's been implementing a strict construction waste plan in accordance with all recycling parameters.
Wonderful. And so how can people learn more about the Indiana Toll Road sustainable practices?
Well, one way is that they can learn more at our website, www.indianatollroad.org. There's a few pages that explains our past projects as well as outlining our future plans. You can also follow us on social media where we post current events and programs as the company goes forward.
Sure. You know, I know, Bill, as we come to the end of our program, I know that you've been working with American Trucking Association on, you know, having truckers put down their cell phones and, you know, be alert. And how's that initiative coming?
It's fantastic. Put the phone down, Indiana.com shows a lot that people can go out there, take a pledge that they're going to end distracted driving. We've set out media releases as well as worked with local ball clubs, including the Gary Railcats and the South Bend Cubs, putting out displays and advertising. So I just wish all your listeners could join us in helping end this distracted driving problem that we have among society.
Yeah, it's a great cause. I mean, every day, you know, on our way actually to the studios to record this, you know, we see distracted driving all the time, and it's a daily occurrence, and you know, all the accidents that occur because of this it's sad.
Yeah, it's probably described as the new drinking and driving of our generation, and it's one that's completely avoidable and preventable.
Absolutely. So any things that are coming up for the summer?
Well, we have not to mention all the sustainability projects that we have in line, but we also are very good community neighbors with the cities and towns that are along our corridor. We participate in the 4th of July parades as well as some of the summer festivals that are out there. So we'll have a tent. You look for us with either the Indiana Toll Road tent or the Put the Phone Down campaign tent, really just getting out there and being part of the community.
Wonderful. Bill, thank you very much for being on the show today, and that will do it for today's edition of Green Fleet Radio. Thanks again to Mr. Bill McCauley, Communications Manager for the Indiana Toll Road Concession Company. And I'm your host, Carl Lissick. Thanks for joining us. And remember, it's never too late to begin your environmental legacy. Thank you, everybody.
Green Fleet Radio is made possible by South Shore Clean Cities. You can hear Carl Lissick and Green Fleet Radio every Wednesday here on Regionally Speaking. And the podcasts of Green Fleet Radio are also available on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as our site on NPR One. Just search for WLPR. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Focus host Keith Kirkpatrick talked recently with the Gary Mayor, Karen Freeman Wilson. And here's the conversation.
Being the mayor of a city like Gary, Indiana, must be a challenging job each and every day. It's a position easily targeted for criticism and attack. Amazingly, I hear many positive comments made about the current head of this city and what she is doing to address the many challenges. It is my pleasure, and I say that with great sincerity, to introduce a well-known face in leadership, Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson. How'd you like that introduction?
Oh, well, I'm very humbled. Thank you, Keith. I'm telling you.
Well, I think you deserve that, because I think being a mayor has to be one of the toughest jobs around. But you make it look like it's fun.
Well, it's certainly a challenging job, but it is by far one of the most rewarding jobs that I've ever had. So I think that's why it looks a lot easier than it is, because it's so enjoyable.
Is it truly rewarding, or do you make it that way?
No, I think it's rewarding because you get an opportunity to see your work up close. You get an opportunity to see the results. Just today, I was sitting with a group of students who were designing benches for a little park that we have designated for seniors. And the love of these sixth graders as they designed, thought about what's best for the seniors in the community was just so endearing to me. When you get a chance to say things like that day in and day out, it does make your job rewarding.
Well, you pointed out two really interesting pieces to that. First of all, you get great pleasure from the little successes.
Oh, absolutely.
And second is you just really enjoy the people.
The people, I believe, are what makes this job as rewarding as it is. Whether it is interacting with seniors in our community, whether it's interacting even with people who may have concerns, complaints. I sent an email today about one of my favorite subjects these days, potholes. And, you know, while the answer wasn't necessarily what the woman wanted to hear, I'm sure, it was an answer that she appreciated and she indicated that she did. And so the ability to talk to, interact with, try to solve problems for and with people is really something that I relish.
So you're telling me you even find joy in dealing with the pothole situation? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
You have to find joy in that. I mean, I'm not saying it's enjoyable, but you have to find joy in the most unlikely places.
So how do you do that? Because being in an elected office, particularly today, I think it's always been tough, but it seems today, man, everybody wants to attack the people who are in positions like yours. How do you deal with the people who just really come at you? You know, just you can't do anything right for these folks.
Well, in many instances, when you have people who are just consistently critical, consistently negative, it is most times based on an experience or experiences that they have had with other people in government, other elected, non-elected officials. And when you look at it that way, it makes it less likely that I will personalize a negative comment, a negative gesture that may be commented or made to me, but really not directed towards me. So when I have it in that context, it makes it a lot easier to have a conversation, to attempt to diffuse any tension or negativity that might be there. And you just can't internalize, even when it's directed at me. I don't internalize it because I understand that a lot of times people don't operate with all of the information I have. All they know is they want what they want when they want it. And they don't understand what is entailed in trying to provide them with the services that they are seeking or that they desire.
Well, you know, people are one side of it. The other side of it is just sometimes things go wrong. Just stuff falls apart. How do you deal with the stress of that, of just, you know, bad news, bad news, bad news, or even people who just after a while, it's like, oh, this is just kind of, how do you deal with the stress?
Well, the personally? Good news is that with every piece of bad news we get three pieces of good news. So balance has a lot to do with it. And then the other aspect is that my faith life has a role in it, because I don't start the day without prayer. I don't start the day without really asking for divine guidance. I've been reading a lot about Solomon, and that is sort of this guidepost for me, if you will. But I also have really been practicing patience as I've matured. I wasn't always patient as a younger woman, and there are times when I'm not as patient as I could be. A lot of times I think about the fact that I'm racing to get things done because I know how urgent it is. And sometimes people probably think, man, is she moving fast? She doesn't take time to let us catch up. But, you know, there's an urgency about the needs that we have, about the needs that our community has, and about the importance to get things done as quickly as we can, but to also do it in a very thoughtful and deliberate way so that we are really ensuring that we have a long-term, sustainable answers to some of the challenges that we face.
How did you grow that patience? Because, you know, your own admission as a younger person, you weren't as patient. You know, I want to get it done. I want to have it now. I want to accomplish something. How did you grow that patience?
I think what I found is that it's important to be patient, because my experience is that when I've done things hastily or when I've pushed forward hastily, there are things that don't get done and that need to be done in order to achieve success. And so you may have a measure of success, but it's certainly not the level of success that you would like to see, whether you're talking about a specific project in the city, whether you're talking about an initiative that you wanted to undertake. And so it has really made me a lot more cautious.
Well, I know a lot of people look at Gary and just, you know, the problems almost to the outside look insurmountable. Just, you've got your plate definitely full, and you're trying to recover from just this, all these things that happened. What's kind of your vision? I mean, what would you would like to say in 10 years, I would love to paint a picture of Gary that looked like this?
Well, one of the things that I always remind folks is that sometimes when they look at the cover of a book, the old adage that you can't judge a book by its cover, then if Gary is the book and you look at one aspect, you can't really judge the city by one aspect of what people see. I've had people to drive down an avenue or street and say, I drove down this street and it looks deplorable. And they may have driven for three blocks. And those three blocks, I would agree, are deplorable. But if you keep driving, you see something that says, wow, I didn't even know this was in Gary, or this is really beautiful. So I really have to place that in context when people say that. And there are times where I challenge their judgments. When people make a cursory or just a judgment that's based on limited information, to say to them, you know, I think you're really making a decision based on limited information, and I'd like to share with you some of the positive things that are going on, some of the successes that are being achieved. And most importantly, particularly for those who live in the city, but also some who live out, here's how you can help make it better. Hmm. Because, you know, if you're not going to work towards the greater good, then particularly for residents, I think you lose the license to criticize.
So I like the book analogy. That comparison is really good. And you know that a lot of people to the outside are looking at the cover of the book,
absolutely,
because they don't really see the inside. That's one challenge. The other challenge, though, is you got people who are on the inside, who can see the inside of the book, but still have a hard time conveying the positive side, right, of what the content of that book is. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know, over and over, we try to provide as much information about the places and the areas where we are succeeding. I mean, you know, we are the only city in the state that received $1 million from the Bloomberg Foundation for a public art project. We are one of the largest recipients over the last 5 years of Knight Foundation money. We have a variety of partnerships that aren't just governmental partners, which are, you know, state, federal government. That's not unusual, county government. But also we have individual partners, organizational partners. We have philanthropy organizations. And so to have this wide array of folk who say, we want to help Gary, we want to help rebuild Gary, we want to see the success. I was just over at one of our local schools where they had over 150 volunteers to come in during the course of the semester to teach many courses to the students there about whatever subject they chose. I taught about advocacy.
And because you're good at that.
Well, you know, I think I'm a pretty good advocate, a pretty good cheerleader, a great lobbyist. And that's what I was talking to the young people at Steel City Academy about. And they were just on fire. So when you have the opportunity to get as many partners, as many folks who say, yeah, we know there are challenges, but we want to focus on the solutions. Yeah, we know that there are some resource issues, but we think that there are things that can be done to bring about positive change that aren't solely dependent on the availability of resources. Well,
there's got to be a very important message in that, to not just the partnerships, but the fact that you've got these outside groups who say, right, we believe what you're doing is the right thing. You're going the right direction. Otherwise, why would they want to throw money into this thing?
Right.
Because they see that good. What kind of experience are you having on more of a national or broader basis? I mean, when you run into people, and I know you go to conferences and you go to D.C., and I mean, what kind of feedback are you getting, or what do you hear for your leadership in this community from the outside, from the bigger outside?
Well, it's very humbling because it's an overwhelmingly positive response. People talk about the progress that we're making so often, and you know, you see this when you see your children every day or when you are in your home every day. You don't see the positive changes that are occurring because you see folks every day. And so when people are not here and they don't see every day what's happening in the city, when they are able to make those observations and when they see the positive things that have happened at Marquette Park, the growth that is occurring on Lake Street, when they see all of the positive change that is being made, they are very complimentary. But I'm always quick to say that it is a team effort. We have a wonderful council and a great working relationship, our judge, our clerk, the folks who I'm honored to work with in City Hall every day, those in the community, whether they be individual citizens, and we have some phenomenal individual citizens who volunteer on a weekly basis, but we also have a great relationship with the corporate community. All of those folk, all of those organizations factor in, and so when people are complimentary at the national level, I am always quick to point them towards a group of folks that that do the work.
Well, you've got some great staff people, and they're very funny from time to time, too.
Well,
so tell me or share with us, what's one of the greatest compliments you've got outside of, I mean, what did somebody say one time that you're like, wow, that really felt good?
Well, you know, the greatest compliment I've gotten is folks who come up to me and say, you know, I'd love to work with your team. Or it's, you know, we want to come to Gary and help out because you all have such great things going on. And I think the other compliment, and we just got this recently, you know, with all of the flooding that's going on, they said, you know, this is the best community that we've worked in. People have been so helpful, so supportive, so easy to work with. And I think that's not a compliment to me. It is a compliment to a larger team of folk who work hard every day.
How come people don't get to hear that message as much as they get to hear, here's another problem in Gary, and here's another murder in Gary, and here's, you know, they hear those negative things, but these pieces don't seem to get out to people as readily.
Well, you know, I think that people are very slow. I know this is true for me, and I think it's also true for people on our team. We are too slow to toot our own horn, and modesty is really a great trait to have. Modesty, humility, those are very important. At the same time, when there are folks who are much quicker to talk about the negativity, and they're not slow to talk about that, then you have to be able to put that humility aside, place it in context, and to talk about the good things that are happening. I mean, we've undergone a tremendous paving program in the city of Gary. We've done wonderful things with art in partnership with groups like the Miller Beach Arts and Creative District. There are any number of events that we have every year that has showing in galleries, that has outdoor, where we have outdoor events. All of those are positive things that happen in Gary. And so, you know, we have to let people know about the positive things that we have happening, about the positive initiatives. We just did a nature play park that is a huge hit with an outdoor nature classroom. Those are some of the things that we need to make people aware of.
I think you're right. This piece of humility does seem to get in the way. I think people misinterpret it sometimes.
Yes.
And you need to be able to say, we've accomplished this, or this has happened. Because otherwise, who really knows these things? So can you get the people to share more of that, you think?
We are. In fact, we're not only going to share more, we're going to do it in a variety of forums. I know you do YouTube, and so we're going to do YouTube more. We're going to do the social media more in terms of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. But we're also going to use traditional news outlets or traditional informational outlets, newsletters. We have a public access channel. We need to use that better and use it more, because one thing we know is that we have a very large senior population in our city, and our seniors, they love to read the newspaper, and they love to read whatever pamphlet, leaflet is handed out, and so we want to give them some information to read.
You still got those readers there, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how long do you see yourself in that role? Kind of what do you look up ahead? I mean, are you going to be mayor forever kind of thing?
Or well, what? I can guarantee you I am I do not aspire to be mayor forever. At the same time, this isn't a stepping stone. I'm in my dream job. It is my honor to serve the citizens of my community, especially my hometown. And when I look ahead, I certainly look forward to taking another run at the office. You know, that'll be next year. But I think that would complete what I've been blessed to have as a very colorful career, a very successful career by outside standards.
What do you hope that people will remember about your leadership?
I think that I'm hoping that people will remember that I tried to be fair, that I was solely focused on providing opportunity to people I refer to as legacy residents, those who have really stuck with Gary through thin and thin. I think that's so important. And that I also wanted to make Gary an inviting place for new residents. At every public meeting that I go to, there is at least one person or one couple who come up to me and say, we just moved into Gary. And I thank them for being there, and celebrate their presence, because that shows that we're moving in the right direction. At the same time, every day I run into folks who say, I've lived in Gary 35 years, I lived in Gary 50 years, I've lived in Gary 20 years. I celebrate those residents just as much, because it shows that despite the challenges, that they have stuck with the city and have been faithful.
Well, I hope people look at your leadership and can learn something from the way you do things, the attitude you take, the approach you take, because I think it's just exemplary of what a leader should be doing, and you've got a really challenging situation. So I thank you for all that leadership you provide and for being the kind of person you are.
Well, thank you. I appreciate always the opportunity to talk to, work with you. The foundation that you've laid at Leadership Northwest Indiana for both adults and young people is something that will be a legacy for years to come.
Well, thank you. We have a complimentary little thing going here.
How about that?
Thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Keith.
All right.
Lakeshore Focus airs on Friday nights at 7:30 and is rebroadcast Sunday mornings at 9:30 on Lakeshore PBS. A law that takes effect in July requires schools to screen students for dyslexia. And as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jeannie Lindsay reports, the hope is that students are identified early of the problems, that schools will be able to intervene and better accommodate them.
Grant Hartley is a fourth grader. He loves playing with Legos after school and says his favorite subject is gym.
But my absolute favorite is soccer.
Grant likes school, but he struggles sometimes. Grant has dyslexia. For some people with dyslexia, reading typed words on a page is just as frustrating as trying to read a bowl of alphabet soup.
It's kind of hard, like, you gotta figure out, like, which one would make best sense in a sentence.
Grant has taken the state's elementary reading exam, the iRead, 3 times. The first time he failed, he was distraught, because that meant summer school and another test.
I already did it once, that should have been it. Like, it was just kind of sad to do it again.
Third graders can't move on to fourth grade reading if they don't pass the iRead. So kids who don't pass or qualify for a waiver, like Grant, go to a few weeks of summer school to study for the test and try again. Leading up to the iRead, Grant struggled with simple words like they or could. His mom, Joellen Hartley, quizzed him constantly.
Before I knew he was dyslexic, I would, you know, like, buddy, it's right here. Like, we just went over this word.
Uncovering the root of Grant's reading struggles, just the word dyslexia, proved to be a battle of its own. At one point, Joellen thought her son had a brain tumor. His teachers didn't know what to tell her.
And she just said, even if he is dyslexic, that he wouldn't be able to be identified until at least fifth grade.
Eventually, Joellen stumbled onto it by sheer luck. She was talking to a friend whose son also has dyslexia. Their symptoms were eerily similar. After Grant was diagnosed, Joellen trained to become a specialist. Now she works with schools to help identify and tutor dyslexic kids.
And I just thought, you know, if I can prevent one more child to go through what mine has, or another parent, if I can help them and guide them, I want to do that.
But not every school has a specialist like Joellen. Many advocates for dyslexia awareness say a certain theme has persisted for years. Schools and teachers hesitant to use the word dyslexia at all, unsure of exactly why a student isn't making progress.
I think we were all sort of in the dark about why this kid seems to be so smart. I mean, they can talk to you about anything, and yet they can't do paper, pencil, read a book kind of things.
That's former educator and dyslexia tutor Mary Binion. She says the disconnect has largely been due to a lack of information. Dyslexia was first defined in Indiana law in 2015, just 3 years ago. And the numbers vary, but anywhere between 10 and 20% of kids live with the learning disability. Binion says the passage of Senate Bill 217 this year is a huge step forward. It requires all schools to screen kids in kindergarten, first, or second grade for key traits associated with dyslexia. And every school corporation will have a reading specialist trained in dyslexia by 2019.
It's far better the earlier ID'd and the earlier remediated, the better they're going to be.
Teachers will get more information around dyslexia under the new law, but it's unclear how comprehensive teacher training will be.
Our
Binion tutors dyslexic kids with her husband 4 days a week at a small church outside of Muncie. She uses what's called a multisensory approach.
Good job, buddy.
Structured literacy that's multisensory, and getting them involved in what we're learning is good for everybody.
Multisensory instruction takes time, though, not something many teachers have to spare. And the new law doesn't change the way Indiana educators teach all kids to read. But Binion and Grant's mom, Joellen, are optimistic, especially since just identifying kids at an earlier age is a big deal.
So those ones who may have fallen through the cracks, that hopefully now this will prevent that.
Because getting the right kind of help for those kids early on can go a long way. After finishing his tutoring program this year, Grant passed the iRead, totally unrelated to a new 5-syllable word he can read now, procrastination. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
Well, it's time to talk with our latest furry friend, Ollie, here at Lakeshore Public Radio. He's joining us in the studio to answer your pet's questions, thanks to the Humane Society of Northwest Indiana.
Dear Ollie, we have 4 small dogs and 1 foster animal for a few weeks. Here's the problem. They just can't stop barking. It's unbearable for my husband and me to enjoy quiet time together or anything else in our home. We even had to watch a Blackhawks game with a chorus of loud and obnoxious canine noise. Please help us stop this critter cacophony. Signed, sore ears with warm hearts and pounding headaches, Hebron.
Dear dog lover with sore ears, etc. When dog barking goes unchecked, you can't have a conversation, watch television, check your iPad, or read the daily paper without hearing the constant yapping. There are many reasons that dogs bark, but primarily it's a way for them to express themselves and let out a lot of bottled-up anxiety and frustration. They can bark when they hear noise, when they see a door open, and the human has to find the triggers for barking, set the consequences for it, and reward the right behaviors. Okay, I got a few things for you to try. Let me give you an example. If a dog barks at the sound of a doorbell, the best way to manage the problem is to teach an alternative response. According to Donna Shaw, dog trainer and groomer, ring the doorbell 1 billion times, well, not really 1 billion, and when no one is there for the dog to greet, eventually the ringing doesn't mean that there is an unfriendly or friendly human on the other side of the door. So the dog's barking behavior is extinguished. My woman human has no patience with this elaborate training program, and she certainly won't ring the doorbell that many times. So she started reading somewhere that dogs hate noises. That's a good idea, she said, and she filled the jar with coins and she pounds on the floor or table to get our attention. And when we look her way and we are quiet, she gives us a treat. That's niftier than ringing a stupid doorbell 1 billion times. But what we do is when she stops banging the coins, we start barking again. She also just read in a pet supply catalog that dogs cringe at the sound of hissing because it reminds them of a snake. I can hardly even write the word snake. It is so repulsive to me. This pet supply company is trying to sell her a can filled with nothing but air that, when sprayed by any human, makes a hissing sound that scares the pants right off of a dog. Well, then a miracle occurs. The dogs stop barking. Really? I heard her say that the whole idea was ridiculous and she had better ways to spend her money. Okay, but the next day, a package arrived at our door from UPS, and the guy in brown uniform rang the doorbell, and we barked. Later, the garage door opened, and we barked again. Then we began barking just for the fun of it. And we barked for less than a minute until we heard a distinct and very loud, I can't say for sure exactly what it was, but we stopped our bad dog barking to listen attentively. And unless there are snakes hiding in our cream-colored carpet or under the wooden floorboards, I'm betting that new noise was coming from the aluminum spray can of whatever she had in my woman-human's hand. She smiled when he finally got very quiet and then slipped us a delicious treat. That process worked. I hate snakes. I even hate the idea of snakes. Signed, Ollie, your friend in fur.
If you have a question for your friend in fur, Ollie, you can email it to ollie@lakeshorepublicmedia.org. It's supported by the Humane Society of Northwest Indiana. Ollie's responses voiced by his human, Victoria Voller. That's it for Regionally Speaking. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us today. Back with you tomorrow.